Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston. Got a big show for you on this Wednesday. We're going to talk to Ron Tillery of the Commercial Appeal about where things stand for the Grizzlies halfway through this season. It is all brought to you today by Draft. The Draft app is awesome. Download it today. Android, iOS, doesn't matter. They've got you covered. And use the promo code LOGRIZZLIES to get yourself a fabulous bonus up to 50%. On that first deposit, L-O Grizzlies is the code. Draft is super easy to use. And for those of you that want to play fantasy and you want to have fun, because really the fun part is the draft. You do it every day, and it's not like the big, huge behemoth sites that are out there where you got to have some kind of algorithm or know somebody or all this stuff to win. No, people win every day, just like you. On Draft, and you can win some money. You can take your friends on there and have your own little private stuff that we like to do too at Locked On and Locked On Podcast Network. You can search for Locked On. I'm Locked On Grizz. Lots of other Locked On shows are out there too, and you can see what they do and join them for all kinds of drafts, especially on Wednesdays. We like to have fun with it across the network. Again, use the promo code LOGRIZZLIES to support the podcast and to support yourself, because you're going to get a bonus on your first deposit with Draft. It is a Draft Wednesday here on the program. Grizzlies in action tonight against the New York Knicks with the opportunity to win again. Do they want to? I don't know. Do you want them to? I don't know. But they could, because the Knicks are not an especially great team. And the Grizzlies have, I'm not going to say something of a rhythm. You never know with the Grizzlies, but they've been playing better at home in particular of late. So we'll talk about that with Ron and a whole lot more coming up here as we speak to the man himself from the Commercial Appeal. It's Ron Tillery.
Man, it's good to be me.
Is it?
Yep, always.
Why?
Because I'm Ron Tillery, damn it.
But this year. Come on, man. Is it really good to be you?
Always.
All right.
It's good to be me, better than the Grizzlies.
I guess. I if that's the way you want to look at it, then that's fine. We are halfway through the season pretty much. 14 and 28. So it's 42 games. So it's 40 left. So, you know, close enough. Halfway through. After the MLK Day game, the win against the Lakers. So I want to kind of take a look at like the whole season, where things are right now with this team. And we talked about it, I think, here on the podcast the day that David Fizdale was fired and the press conference announcing JB and the whole thing happened. And at the time, the excuse given was trends. Team was trending in the wrong direction. They were 7-12 at that point. They are 7-16 since then. So the trends have not gotten a whole lot better. Does the whole rationale behind firing David Fizdale look even more foolish now than it did then?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense based on the trend narrative, because that was just stupid and silly. It doesn't make any sense based on the results, because they lost 19 of 21 games following the firing. And now they're 5-5 in their last 10, but they're even further out of the playoff race. It doesn't make any sense because, you know, Fizdale had the team competing admirably in the playoffs last year, because in the series against the Spurs, and then they started the season 5-1, and it doesn't make any sense because ultimately he was brought here to transition the franchise beyond the core four with Tony Allen, Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, and Zach Randolph into a new era of Grizzlies basketball, and he was given basically 100 games. And so that's not enough time to move forward. So, yeah, they definitely look foolish, because they're on their fourth coach in the 5 years that Robert Parr has owned the team. And while JB has been an incredible interim, there's just no idea of who will be the coach going forward. And so they could very well be on their fifth coach in 6 years since the change of ownership.
Well, I mean, you and I have talked on the radio side. We've talked in this podcast here as well. But you know, on the podcast, you know, I like to keep it as real as I can possibly keep it for the Grizzly fans, because the fans that are listening are like the real, you know, there's a lot of hardcore fans that are listening. So we like to keep it real as we possibly can here on the podcast. So my question to you is, does any of this change if Robert Pera remains the owner? Because the coaching situation, you know, they've gone all that coaching instability that you talked about. So much of it comes from being cheap. I mean, they don't want to spend the money. They were nervous about extending Lionel Hollins because, you know, he ended up getting a 4-year or a 3-year, you know, $12 million deal with Brooklyn. They didn't want to spend $4 million a year on the coach. Then on top of that, you saw where, okay, after that, Dave Yeager, he wasn't making a whole bunch of money. He leaves. David Fizdale was the lowest paid coach basically in the NBA. You know, they tried to knock on some other doors and offered some low money there. That was ridiculous. And now JB comes in and, you know, he's making peanuts. And if he gets hired full time, I'm sure he'll be making a little more peanuts, but probably not even what David Fizdale was making. Is there any like thought, or is this just the way the franchise is going to be run?
Well, I believe so, because to your point about coaching, you know, listen, Lionel Hollins made $2 million a year by the time he was not renewed. So they hired his assistant at $2 million. And that was his peak by the time that he was fired. And then David Fizdale was hired not only at $2 million for the first year, but $2 million for the second year. So he didn't even get a raise as a playoff coach in the second year of his deal with the Grizzlies. And so, I mean, they just don't value coaching at a time where, you know, coaches make, you know, minimum $5 million. Luke Walton left the Warriors and coached the Lakers for $5 million a year. You know, when the Warriors fired Mark Jackson and hired Steve Kerr, it was at $5 million a year. And so you're not going to, going forward for the Grizzlies, get a coach who's a game changer or anything but a first-time head coach, somebody's, you know, highlighted assistant. If you're going to just continue to pay $2 million or less for a coach,
well, here's the thing that I think is important, because I'm not saying that, like, you know, my criticism of this is not necessarily that they need to pay, you know, $10 million a year and go get Phil Jackson or something crazy. You can win with all different types of coaches. You could win with a first-time guy. You can win with a veteran. It all depends on how you run your organization. The problem is, though, that situations like what happened with Fizdale and Marc Gasol and you know, just some of the unease that happened late in his tenure between him and, you know, front office and the whole thing, all of that is exacerbated when you don't pay the guy, because he doesn't have any stability. You know, the guys in the locker room look and they say, "You're making nothing. You could just get, they could dump you for nothing. What do I need to commit to you when the organization hasn't committed to you? Well, I look and see what happened to Dave Yeager. Well, I look and see what happened to Lionel Hollins. Well, I look and see what happened now to Fizdale. You know, the next guy. Why would a coach want to come here knowing that basically the way this thing is run, how much stability is he going to have and support from the front office if there are issues that come up with players?"
Right, and that speaks to the instability of the franchise, because ultimately the coach wants the backing of the front office and management to be able to coach every player on the roster and to be able to run the team as he sees fit. And that's the part of coaching that matters. You know, like, okay, so as a contrast to what I'm talking about, like, if you want to talk about the Spurs, if you want to talk about the Mavericks, they go through the ups and downs with their coaches. But if you want to talk about a handpicked guy in Phoenix who was supposed to go along with management who got screwed, you want to talk about Earl Watson. Because he was not allowed to coach that team. He was handpicked to coach that team lock and step with the management wishes. And then at the end of the day, when everything was going bad, he was the scapegoat. And so that just doesn't make for continuity. That doesn't make for stability.
When you're hired, you want to know that you're going to be supported. When you're hired, you want the history of the franchise to be supporting the coach and getting after it. I mean, sometimes you can make a transition that's controversial. I mean, it was controversial when Steve Kerr took over for Mark Jackson. That's obviously worked out great because Steve Kerr has been fully supported by that front office, and they were fully on board with it. Everybody was on board with it. Everyone was on board from the players on up. And the Grizzlies, you know, there's no stability there, which kind of brings me to the trade deadline, Ron, which is the big thing that's out. I mean, right now, you know, on the basketball court, it is what it is. You know, they're not especially compelling. You know, the wins kind of feel like, oh, geez, you know, I don't even know if you want to win these games. And, you know, the losses sometimes, like the one in Denver, are just brutal with 78 points scored and 31 in the second half. So the trade deadline takes on a huge importance with this group. But who's actually running things? Like, who's going to make these calls? How many of these people in the front office are actually assured that they're going to be in their job by the end of the season?
Well, what you're alluding to is the buy-sell clause that's been executed by the minority owners, the limited partners, Steve Kaplan and Daniel Strauss. And so what we're in the process of is trying to figure out what they will value the franchise at. And so the long and short of it is, and you know this, I just want to explain it to your listeners, is that the fifth-year anniversary of the change in ownership to Robert Pera brought about this clause with these minority owners. And the clause states that they get to set the price. And so what we're waiting on is for them to set the price of the Grizzlies and whether Robert Pera will buy them out or whether they will actually buy Robert out at their own valuation of the franchise. And so to your question about, you know, the future of the front office, is it all is hinges on that. And we would like to know that all of this would actually come to a conclusion by the draft, but we don't know when it's going to come to its conclusion. And so everything up in the air, which speaks to the very definition of instability. You know, I just don't know how the Grizzlies front office, mainly Chris Wallace, the general manager, can continue to express, you know, how stable this team is when there's so much up in the air. And as a business, they're going to be asking for season ticket renewals, Peter, come March.
Yes, that's right.
And they're going to be asking for season ticket renewals without a playoff berth, without knowing their draft position, and without knowing the ownership situation.
Yeah, I mean this is why it is unstable, and why when, you know, Chris Wallace says, "Oh, we're, you know, stable, we're this," it just rings hollow. There's no reason for anyone to believe that. And you know, the thing I think about with this is that, okay, so a lot of these guys, even if Paris stays, there's a decent chance something, you know, maybe even something that's superficial changes within the structure. Maybe Ed Stefanski takes more power. Maybe John Hollinger. Maybe Chris has moved to a different thing. I don't know. I'm not sure it would change the real nuts and bolts of the whole operation. But at least it might be some window dressing that's done. If Steve Kaplan takes over, I would suspect that it would be wholesale changes and probably Jason Levien coming back into the mix. So in that kind of environment, is Chris Wallace, Ed Stefanski, John Hollinger, whoever the decision makers happen to be, are they trying to like squeeze what they can out of this season to try to say, well, you know, look what we did here, keep the job? Or does short-term thinking come into it? Or can we all agree, even if those guys are going somewhere else, that the best course of action has to be to think future no matter what?
I think it has to be future no matter what. But it's hard to know with the Grizzlies because they're just so disingenuous and they're so dishonest. And they spend way too much to the point where I think they insult their fans. And it's certainly an insult to the media who studies their every move. You know, you look at the Sacramento Kings, and they're coached by a former Grizzlies coach, Dave Yeager, who just simply came out last night, Tuesday night, and said, "We're going young. We're 13-30. We're going young." And That's just admitting that the season is lost, and we got to find out what we got on this roster. You think the Grizzlies are going to do that? They want to keep people hanging on by a thread, hoping that they're going to play Mike Conley again, and he won't. They're going to keep people hoping that, you know, Chandler Parsons still has something to give, and he doesn't. And they want to keep people thinking that, yeah, okay, we're 14-28, but we're not mathematically eliminated, so we're still going for it. And yet they will not make the playoffs. So it's hard to know, you know, what they're thinking, but I think it's pretty obvious that that this is a mess from top to bottom, from Robert Pair, the owner, to Chris Wallace and his management team. To the business side.
Well, I'm not advocating like specifically going out and trying to lose games or anything, but it doesn't make any sense for them to try to win 35 games and get a worse draft pick. This is a good draft. It's a really good draft. You could get a guy that actually would be exciting. You could sell, Trae Young or DeAndre Ayton or one of these guys, Luka Doncic, or you could sell that. That's something that you could actually sell in the midst of a big rebuild when you're not going to win a whole lot of games. You could at least kind of say, okay, look at this guy. Look, there's something there. But the Grizzlies, if they mess that up in this, you know, ridiculous attempt to try to make a playoff when that is not going to happen and it shouldn't happen, and even if it did, what would be the point? Because you're just going to get drilled by whoever you play in the first round. That would be the epitome of ridiculous short-term thinking. So you mentioned, you threw a couple things in there I wanted to double back on. Mike Conley, you don't think he's coming back. You think they'll find some way to keep kind of extending this thing out, and he'll be reevaluated, and then come like, you know, mid February or March, they're like, well, it's too late and we're out of it, so let's shut him down. You think that's going to happen?
I think so. Because you were there when we were having the Mike Conley summit,
right?
You know, not to be overshadowed by the Marc Gasol summit.
Much shorter than the Marc Gasol summit. An hour shorter and much less ballyhooed and in the locker room as opposed to the weirdo conference room in the middle of FedEx Forum somewhere.
Exactly. A place in FedEx Forum we've never seen.
Never seen.
Never knew existed.
Did not know.
For the Marc Gasol summit. So, yeah. So, while the Mike Conley summit was going on, apparently on the Grizzlies broadcast, the pregame broadcast, they were saying that Mike was targeting the MLK Day game, which happened on Monday against the Lakers, which happened to be a win.
Targeting it for what? For targeting for going to the museum, for going to the Civil Rights Museum, for meeting Adam Silver. I mean, what was the target exactly? Because it wasn't playing.
He was targeting his. What would he say if he were to finish the I Have a Dream speech?
That's right. Targeting that little speech. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So while we were talking to Mike, and Mike was telling us nothing, apparently the pregame show was announcing that he was going to come back on MLK Day, which was Monday, and that didn't happen. And now he's out Wednesday against the Knicks, and it's highly doubtful that he'll play Friday against Sacramento and Saturday against New Orleans. So the further this thing goes along, it's just common sense. And that's why, you know, I feel so strongly about what I said earlier. Stop insulting the intelligence of the media and your fan base and just say we're shutting it down. I mean, like, how simple is it? Dave Yeager for the Sacramento Kings just came out and said we are going young. And then extended his comments to say that I'm going to give our veterans a schedule of when they will and will not play for 40-something games.
I assume Zach's playing on Friday, right?
I assume Zach and
Vince are playing Friday, right?
Well, I would expect Zach to play Friday, yeah.
I hope so, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think Dave is a lot of things, but I don't think he's stupid. He's a lot of unflattering things, but he's not dumb. Dumb enough to not play Zach on Friday.
Well, Zach would not
allow
that.
But the point is, you know, they just were honest about where they're headed for the second half of the season based on where they are today. And they are not far off from the Grizzlies at all. They're right there with them.
Well, the thing that I don't get is, like, I mean, you obviously, if you're the Grizzlies, it's malpractice if you don't trade Tyreke Evans. You have to get something for him. I mean, you would like to get a first, maybe because of his contract, that's a little tricky. Maybe you have to end up with a second, or maybe you have to give your second as a make weight to kind of get. I don't know. There's a deal out there for sure for him, because that's something can happen there. You would be remiss not to try your best to make something happen with Brandon Wright, because I suspect if they don't trade him, they'll buy him out before March 1st. There's no reason for him to be. He has no point on this roster. He's no long term. He's not, you know, a young guy. He's not an old guy. He's not helping. He's just there. So if they can't trade him, I think they buy him out. James Ennis is kind of in that same category where he's 27, 28. Maybe they want to keep him long term, so maybe they keep him around. But otherwise, you know, you've got the early bird rights on him. But there's, you know, he could probably help a contender maybe as a real low, you know, ninth, tenth type guy. I mean, he's got some, you know, two-way value there, so maybe you could put him into a deal, something like that. But to me, all that is just like you make those moves and then you say, yeah, we're going young and we're going to develop. And you know what? That's you're going to win as many games doing that with this Grizzly team as you are with the vets of Marc Gasol, who's not affecting winning one iota, no matter what numbers he's putting up. He's not affecting winning at all. You know, Tyreek, same kind of thing. He's putting up numbers, but they're not winning these games. You have as good a chance to win a bunch of games going young as you do not going young. So it's not even like a quote-unquote tank. They're tanking without tanking right now. Anyway, that's the worst of both worlds.
That's true, and you're right. And it's the worst place to be in the NBA. Because what you're going to do is end up winning enough games to be in the middle of the lottery, or at the bottom, I should say, the bottom.
Yeah,
like
9, 10, something like that, you know,
right.
Which is like, that's just outside of where these like elite dudes are. The
exactly.
Only way you're getting elite talent in Memphis, Ron, God knows you know this, having covered, you know, 17 drafts and 17 free agent periods and all that stuff, free agents of import are not coming to Memphis unless it's a situation like Chandler Parsons, where there are severe red flags and something you're overpaying, and there is a, you know, serious something that's going to be a problem. Free agents of major import are not coming to Memphis. They are hard to trade for because you don't feel like you could probably keep them in Memphis.
Right.
So the only way you're going to get them is through the draft, and it's not a hard concept to figure out. That's the only way you're going to get these guys that could theoretically be game changers and franchise changers. Why would people want to sign in Milwaukee? Because they want to play with Giannis, not because they like Milwaukee. Milwaukee sucks. Milwaukee's not a great town. It's cold,
right.
Whatever. But now they got a guy in the draft that is a legit superstar, MVP-type guy. Now guys are like, okay, well maybe I will think about playing with them. The Grizzlies, in order to get that guy, you got to draft him, period.
Well, this is, Peter, why I hate the super team argument, because, you know, the narrative in Memphis is, well, you know, you can't be San Antonio. You can't be Golden State. Yes, the hell you can. You know how you can be Golden State? You can hit on draft picks like Golden State did with Steph Curry, with Klay Thompson, with Draymond Green in the second round. And then a free agent like Kevin Durant will want to come and join you. Because guess what? They want a title without Durant. How is that a super team? That's a smart team. You can be San Antonio if you get lucky, obviously, by getting Tim Duncan. But also if you draft Manu Ginobili late in the second round. If you draft Tony Parker late in the first round. If you give up on a veteran point guard for a draft pick, and know you want to take Kawhi Leonard and take him. I mean, it's not that hard. And so I hate the super team argument. I hate the I can't argument. You can be Oklahoma City and get three of the top 10 players in the league if you go and trade and maneuver like Sam Presti did with the Thunder to put together Russell Westbrook, Paul George, and
Carmelo.
Yeah, Carmelo Anthony. I don't like him, so I couldn't think of his name. But anyway, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, stop telling me it can't be done because you're in Memphis. It can't be done because you're in Memphis because you have an F front office.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it has begun and ended, and that's why I share the concern of the fans who would say, well, you know, if there are not significant changes in the front office, how can you trust whatever this rebuild is going to be if it's going to be in the draft? How can you trust it? I would agree with that 100%. The process that they go through, and this goes back, Ron, to what we talk about. Those teams that you mentioned, what do they all have in common, okay? They all have strong ownership, and they all have strong ownership that empowers a strong front office. There's great synergy and commitment between the front office and the ownership. The ownership says, look, we own the team. We're going to let you guys do this. Here's what you do. Okay, the Holt family in San Antonio said, R.C. Buford, you're the guy. Greg Popovich, you're the guy. Y'all take care of it. You won't see us. You won't hear from us. That's who's going to do it. You know, in Golden State, when they had their ownership change, you know, the group that they've got said, look, Bob Myers, you're running things. You know, Jerry West, you can consult a little bit, but ultimately it's going to be Bob. It's going to be Steve Kerr. It's going to be this group. That's who's going to make these decisions, period, end of story. Same thing in Oklahoma City. You know, Clay Bennett, he brought that thing from Seattle to Oklahoma City and brought in Sam Presti. And once he brought in Sam Presti, he said, you are the guy. You're running this thing. I'm going to let you do your deal. And look, that's how it has to be. In Memphis, it's Robert Pera. We don't know. He's doing stuff. He's out there. He's flying around, doing this, doing that, not being transparent, not talking to people, not showing up. And he's got his deputy, Joe Abadi, who we both saw on Monday, you know, bebopping around and doing his thing. And he serves this nebulous role, but we're not really 100% sure exactly what that is. You got other guys that are kind of there, but they're not sure what that is. No one seems to have the synergy about how this thing is going to be run, and you end up with a process that doesn't even make sense and really doesn't even exist for how you're going to build a team. And that's a recipe for disaster. That's why the Grizzlies, outside of getting very fortunate with this core four, have spun their wheels everywhere else.
No, that's exactly right. And the last thing you said is the most important thing. There's no process. Even when it seems like Philadelphia was ridiculous with their quote-unquote process, they had a plan. And they executed their plan. And they're starting to see the fruits of the labor of the plan. Even when people mocked late Grizzlies owner Mike Heisley and his three-year plan, he had a plan. And guess what? It resulted in the core four. This ownership, this management team has not effectively articulated a plan for the franchise beyond the core four, except for to say that you know, Zach, you can go wherever you want to go, and Tony, you can go wherever you want to go. I mean, it's a rudderless boat.
Yeah, and trying to make the playoffs is not a plan. That's not like, hey, we're going to try our best. That's not a plan. You got to know what you're going to do, which is why at the trade deadline, I don't know what they – you know, you would think that they would be considering potentially listening to stuff on Mark, listening to stuff on whoever at this stage based on just where they are. Because next year, I mean, are you trying to win? As good as rookies are, very rarely do they come in and actually affect winning. Look at the Utah Jazz this year, good example. Everyone's talking about how great Donovan Mitchell is. He's really good. Look at the Utah Jazz record. They're terrible. They've had a horrible year. They've had injury issues and everything else, and Donovan Mitchell's been a great, great player. He's not affecting winning. How many guys come in?
Smith Jr. in Dallas exactly. Has been an outstanding rookie, and he's playing with Dirk, but yeah, he's not winning.
I mean, Porzingis was phenomenal, didn't affect winning. Anthony Davis came in, was phenomenal, didn't affect winning. Karl Anthony Towns, amazing. And it's just now that they are, along with him and Wiggins and everything else, just now starting to actually win when they get Jimmy Butler. You know, it's guys that come in as rookies and are carrying a big load don't affect winning. So if the Grizzlies draft Trae Young or whoever and expect that he's going to play and jump in alongside Mike and Mark and that's going to be like enough to get back to the playoffs like after year one, you're crazy. You're crazy. That group's not good enough.
Especially when Mark has shown you that he's not a lead guy.
No, and
he'll be a year older. He'll be 33 this month and he'll be 33 going on 34 next season. And his productivity is declining, and he's already showed you in his last two seasons that he's not capable of leading or being a dominant player at his position anymore.
Do you think he's fallen off? Do you think there's any value out there for Mark? Would a team like, even if they were going to take offers on him, and I don't, you know, I don't think at this point they are. But if they were, is there even offers that are worth anything out there?
I don't think so, just because of where the league is today. And we spoke about it in terms of Anthony Davis and Boogie Cousins. Guys in his position are way more agile, athletic, versatile, dominant than Mark has shown. He has morphed into a traditional center. And I know that he has great instincts defensively. He's a good passer and all that stuff. He can shoot the ball. But he's not those things that Anthony Davis and Boogie Cousins and help me out. I'm trying to think of the kid.
Well, I mean, Carl Anthony Towns,
the kid in Boston who was often mentioned in trades for Mark.
You're talking about like Jason.
Al Horford.
Oh, Al Horford. Yeah.
I mean, but he just so as you put it earlier. I mean, like he's just falling back on that list of centers that you would like to have in today's NBA game. And with his age and his injury history, I just don't know what you can fetch for him.
And I think at this point, you know, if they don't move him, they need to, you know, severely limit his minutes. There was no reason for him to come back in the game on Monday against the Lakers when Deontay Davis was having, you know, one of his rare good games, and Mark comes in to spell him for the last, you know, whatever, 6-7 minutes of that game for no reason. Like, why is Mark back in that game? Why is Deontay not getting those minutes? This is what I mean. Like, you got to pick your spots. And when Deontay's actually doing something, let the man do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Mark's got it.
I agree with you.
And Mark had this thing about, you know, he wanted to, you know, teach him to play the right way and all this stuff. That, come on. You got to let the – young players need to play. You can talk about playing the right way all you want. They just need to actually play. And the Grizzlies have done not a real good job of actually letting their rookies play historically. This year is a little bit different because of necessity. But, you know, like Mario Chalmers should not be, you know, on this team at this point. I mean, he's just, other than as a tank helper, I mean, he's done a good job of helping you lose games. But he doesn't need to be playing meaningful minutes. What's the point? You're not keeping Mario Chalmers. He's not part of your future.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a valid point. It's an interesting dynamic because, you know, as you said earlier, you know, I've been here all 17 seasons and I've seen 21 teams, but they were more like the Lakers are today in that you could just like, okay, they're losing, but watch Shane Battier and Paul Gasol develop. And how exciting is that? They're losing, but, you know, here comes Rudy Gay and O.J. Mayo and Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. You know,
right? There's a core of something,
right? But now it's like they're losing, and for what? Like, what do you have to hold on to? Nothing.
I mean,
because the reality is, Mark's 33, Mike's 30, and they're both injury prone. And aside from them getting lucky with Dylan Brooks, and he's not a star. He's going to be a solid NBA player for 10 plus years, but there's nothing that says star about him.
No.
Aside from that, like, what are you holding on to?
That's my question. So last thing, Ron, at the end of the, when the trade deadline comes February 8th, how many guys are off this team? Like how many of these deals do we see? Do we see Tyreek move? Do we see Brandon Wright? Do they, James Ennis? Do we, is it going to be just a, let's wipe off anybody that's got half a cent of value and just get them off the roster? Or do they try to get too cute with this thing and end up kind of messing it up?
Well, that's certainly possible, but I think the Grizzlies are going to be big sellers. I think they're shopping, Ben McLemore. They're shopping, obviously Tyreek, you've got to shop Brandon Wright, James Ennis. I mean, these are guys who are not going to be on your team next year, save Ben McLemore, who has another year left. But it would be bitterly disappointing if I were a Grizzly fan if they didn't make a deal. So I would guess that there's something that's going to happen.
Would they take on any kind of money at all? Like for next year, I mean, would they be willing to? Because they're pretty stacked up, you know. Especially if they're not gonna, you know, they if they have any kind of thought of re-signing Tyreek, it's going to be tough because of, you know, they just don't have any cap space. And even with the mid-level, they'd have to move a little bit to wiggle out and to get to where they need to get with the mid-level. Would they be willing to take on a little extra money next year to get a better first-round pick? A team like Detroit or somebody like that probably has an extra deal or two with some extra years on it. Pelicans have some horrible contracts that they could get rid of if they wanted to get Tyreek back. Do you think they'd be willing to listen to that, or is it strictly like just get the money off the books? Let's go.
Well, I think that's where we get back into the ownership territory. I think it's hard to answer that question, but I would lean on the side of no to as an answer, because you just don't know, you know, where the ownership is going to be. You know, what part of the negotiation delves into that area? I mean, you know, again, the people who hold all the cards are still, you could say Robert Parr, because he has the right to respond to the offers. But, I mean, you know, the people who really hold major cards in this are the minority owners who have a right to set the valuation of this team. And so I think that's a great question you pose, because will their decisions be based on what's best for the franchise or what's best for a possible ownership change?
Those two things are in conflict a little bit, I think, right about now. Rod Tiller, you can read Ron's stuff in the Commercial Appeal, in the paper if you are here in the Memphis area, or certainly online if you are not, at commercialappeal.com. He is at CA Grizzbeat on Twitter, and he loves when you tweet him. He loves it. He's a big fan of it, so definitely tweet him lots of stuff. Ron really appreciates all that. Especially the negative feedback, right? You really appreciate that, Ron? When people send you stuff like that, you're a big fan?
Man, what I would love more than anything is if you let me take phone calls when I'm on your radio show. Come on.
We're working on that technology. How about that? We'll do a little mailbag or something.
I come on there and I get to hear you talk, ask me questions. I want to talk to the people.
Well, walk out your door. Start talking. You're a man of the people. Start talking to people. I see you down at FedEx Forum holding court. I got it. I know how it goes. I'll see you down there tonight, Ron. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, buddy.
No problem.